UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Engage.
78 years have passed since the days of the original USS Enterprise. Now a new galaxy starship has been designed.
Transporter Chief, beam our listeners aboard. Welcome to Galaxy Class, a Star Trek Next Generation podcast on BQN. I am your host, Joe Keegan, and joined with me today is Counselor Amy Nelson. Amy, how are you today?
Well, I don't know who I'm talking to. This is just not Joe Keegan. Who am I talking to?
I don't know. I think I'm back to being Boothby, or I don't know, I'm garden landscaper.
Okay.
I've been painting the garden like all day, and I did get a bit fried in the sun. We have the sun in Scotland.
No, I don't believe it. It better be there next month. That's all I'm saying.
Very warm. Uncomfortably warm. I'm a bit toasty. I've got like a watch strap.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. You have been kissed by the sun.
Yes. And I'm like, ouch. So what's been happening?
Well, I've been enjoying my time. I was a little handy myself and I replaced some doorknobs on my front door and my garage door. So thankfully, I was watching YouTube videos. Apparently, it is pretty easy, but it took me a good 3-4 hours. Couple runs to the hardware store because I bought the wrong handle, and so I had to go back. And you know, it was all fun though. But I learned how to do that, and I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, and you saved getting some kind of handyman out to or handywoman out to do it and charging you lots of money. It didn't take you 3 hours, though, so there's balance.
Well, good thing I'm not working.
Yeah, next time, you know how to do it, so you've developed a new skill.
Yeah, the first one took me the longest, and then when I did the second one, it was like, toot, 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 and it, worked out nice.
Or do your door handles beep?
Well, I
did you
was,
beep while you
yes.
were doing it?
Ah, mm-hmm.
Cool. Like a crazy
and did
moment.
You...
I thought it was only me that beeped while I was doing chores.
Exactly. And did you know that these keys and the locks, you can change the lock to match any key?
Uh-huh.
I did not know. So the one set, I used that key, and then I re-keyed the second lock to match so that one key opens both.
You just change your tumbler, don't you?
Yeah, there's something that did that,
Nice, cool. So do you also, when you go into a room, just with a normal human door, do you like type in an access code on the door?
No, I did not get the electric one. My mom has those.
But do you just do that? Like type in an imaginary access code on the door frame?
Well, that would be really cool if the door like opened automatically. I would do that. But mine don't open automatically.
Mine don't either, but I still do that.
Yeah, you never.
Yes, I do. Yes, I'm the forever child. Do you ever play The Floor is Lava?
Oh my gosh. I haven't played that in forever.
Like since you were a child, so you didn't play last week. I play The Floor is Lava all the time. I sometimes pretend I have to get upstairs as quick as possible while programming my computer walls, because the walls in my house are all computers, before the lava or the natural disaster comes in and wipes out the bottom floor of the house.
Wow. Stairs, for me, it's not lava. It's running up so that the monster doesn't get me. I have to beat the monster to the top of the stairs,
You're going to love our stairs. We don't have any kick plates on our stairs. So the monster can put his arms through and grab your ankles each stair. Oh, terrifying. Talking about terrifying monsters, have you seen season 4 of Stranger Things?
No, unfortunately, I have cancelled my Netflix account.
Oh, no. Okay.
I know.
So I'm still kind of traumatized. This monster thing really scares me.
Yeah.
Like, I can't go up the stairs in the dark. I have to have a light on. Scary, scary business. Yeah. Anyways, shall we do some feedback?
We should.
Okay, we'll check the communication array to see if we have any comments from our listeners.
Logs accessed.
Then we have some feedback from last week's episode where we interviewed Kelvin and James. Talking about cosplay in Star Trek. Amy, do you want to take the first comment?
Well, we have Kevin. Hello. Hi, Kevin. Says, great episode. Thank you for not mentioning my cosplay malfunction at Mission Chicago. And Paul writes, I must have missed that. I loved your Wesley Crusher's bowling shirt, though. Kevin replied, it was subtle. I didn't notice until Ewan put on his Picard uniform.
Oh, that's right. He put his uniform on back to front.
Yes.
It's kind of symmetrical. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you know what? Nobody noticed it apart from Ewan. So,
yeah.
Ewan Cruikshank, some guy, says, in defense of my incorrect com badge, I'm going to go with the story I was cosplaying as a temporal agent before CGI fixed my badge. I think that's right. I like shiny badges.
Yeah. I do too.
The non-shiny badges look cheap, dare I say it.
Well, according to Kelvin and James, they are screen accurate. Yeah, I like the shiny ones too. Shh, don't tell them.
We're like magpies.
Well, we have Paul Wright says, great show. I just started the cosplay thing at Chicago as Cisco. And Dan Leckie says, welcome aboard.
I thought Avery Brooks had stopped doing conventions due to ill health.
I know, and there he was in Chicago.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well done, Paul. You looked awesome.
I didn't know that was his first. I really thought he did cosplay in STLV. I don't know, but good job, Paul.
This is the captain. Senior officers will report to my ready room immediately.
Amy, do we have a guest?
Well, we do. You know, we are doing a Bat'leth battle. We can't have two of us.
I know. We're doing Bat'leth battle number XXIV, which, if you don't know, is 24. And our Bat'leth battle co-host for today is our very good friend, Christos Genaris. Christos, how are you?
I'm doing great. And you guys are both a little crazy. Although I do sometimes think that, you know, there's a tsunami coming and I need to get upstairs. So.
Oh, a tsunami.
We all have our, yeah, that, or, you know, I do like also don't step on cracks.
Oh, that's a good one.
So I still do that stuff as in my 40s. So.
I sometimes worry about my friends that live in these dangerous places, like that are at risk of tsunamis and earthquakes. That's why I don't really want to go to Mission Seattle next year, because like I saw a documentary on what happens if there's a Pacific earthquake and a giant tsunami takes out Seattle. And I'm like, I'm going to be there obviously when it happens. So
I'm coming to you from Palm Springs this morning, and I'm not far from the San Andreas Fault, so I always think about things like that too.
Well, I don't think anything's going to happen, at least right now.
Let's hope not.
Hopefully not. You could always move to hide under a table or in a door frame if anything goes wrong, as long as you continue to podcast with us.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So our Bat'leth battle today, we're going to be talking about Season 1, Episode 11, which is Haven, and also Season 2, Episode 13, Times Squared. Pitting these two amazing episodes, because I quite like enjoy them both, against each other. Amy, do you want to give us a summary of Haven?
Yes.
Because I figure it's a Troy episode, so you might like that.
It is. Yes. So with Haven, they get a lovely surprise from Miss Lwaxana Troy. Gets delivered this announcement, and Troy is betrothed, and the wedding has now come. So we get introduced to Wyatt Miller and the Millers, his parents, and how everything needs to be apropos, and they have to plan the wedding. And in the meantime, there is Wyatt has been having these dreams of who this mysterious woman is. And when he sees Deanna, it's not her. Come to find out, there is, what kind of ship is it that's
Talarian?
Talarian, yes. And on that ship is this beautiful woman who Wyatt has been dreaming of. So they go through all of that, and Wyatt is a doctor and feels that it is his life's mission, according to his dreams, to help the Talarian ship. So he goes off with them, and Deanna is breaks off the engagement.
Very good. Christos, what do you think about this episode?
I think it's a fun episode for season one, especially. And there's a lot of firsts in this episode. I mean, I think it's like the 8th or the 11th episode of the first season. But, you know, we meet Lakshwana Troy for the first time. So you can't you got to love it just for that. But, you know, it's a little bit crazy as you have your A and B plots that kind of come together in this episode. But, you know, I enjoy it for what it is. It's a fun episode to watch.
I think so too. I've not seen it in a while, so I watched it today. And I found myself laughing quite a lot. I found it quite humorous. I think maybe because season one of TNG, maybe about season two, all seem a bit hokey and like they've not aged very well. But the lack of collars on the uniforms kind of make them look half naked. Yeah, I love, there's so many comedic moments, like with the suitcase. And Mr. Holm himself just being comedic, and then the dinner scene.
Oh, yes.
With that.
The dinner scene is crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Deanna losing it, and Data is just hilarious throughout the whole thing. He's fascinated by how all these humans are behaving. So, yeah, I really enjoy it. Let's talk about our guest stars that are in it. We've already mentioned, Majel Barrett as Lakshwana Troy, but do you know what I can't get over? Rob Napier as Wyatt Miller. I think we mentioned it one time before on Galaxy Class. Rob Napier plays Teabag in Prison Break.
Yes.
The prisoner who's like the paedophile, kidnapper,
the creepy
rapist,
one,
murderer guy. Yeah, really seriously creepy throughout the entire run of Prison Break. But Wyatt Miller is a completely different character from him. When I watch Haven, I can see Teabag. My brain's kind of resolved that problem.
That is so funny, because when I see Wyatt Miller, I don't even remember Teabag, because it is such a different character. And now when you talk about it, I'm like, oh yeah, his character was so icky, you know, as Teabag, and how well he played that. Like, he's a great actor. Glad to have him.
Christos, what are you thinking about the guest stars?
You know, the actress that plays his mother, I couldn't remember her name, but I feel like she's an older actress who's been in a million things.
Nan Martin is her name.
I'm doing this without my companion, so I feel I'm a little naked right now. And the father was also, is he not in the episode a few more, in another TNG episode a little bit later in the season?
Oh, actually, he's a Federation president in Star Trek 4, is it? Yes.
Okay, good. At least I'm like, I've seen this guy, like I said, I rewatched it this morning, and I'm watching this, and of course, I forget I have my phone, and I could just look these things up, but normally I just have my TNG companion, and I look all this stuff up, and it's really handy. The guest stars are good. There's a lot of people in this episode, especially, you know, with the aliens. And so there's just a lot happening and a lot to focus on. So it's kind of interesting to, you know, get all the character dynamics with each other.
I keep seeing like Daryl Hannah. Is that who was in Splash?
Yeah.
I keep on seeing her when we first meet the alien woman that Wyatt's been dreaming about, and her name is Ariana. I think it's the hair, that blonde 80s perm thing that she's got going on. But I don't know. I don't literally, with TNG episodes, you always get a bunch of people and we know them from other stuff. like other US TV shows and movies from around that time. But I don't know that there's... Ren, the captain of the Telerian plague ship, was also a Sona doctor in Insurrection. Played by Ray Burke. That's interesting.
So speaking of crazy 80s hair, I couldn't help but notice and comment on the dinner scene where one of the very few times you actually see that they did Tasha, Deanna, and Beverly's hair different for a scene because it was supposed to be a formal scene. And all they really did was take Tasha to the 80s with her haircut and gave Beverly this matronly look. And then Deanna, they just glued on more hair on top of the hair she already had.
Tasha's hair makes me double take every time in this episode. Because it's all hairspray. There's more of hairspray than hair. Christos, you'll be the person to ask what wig iteration is Dr. Beverly on in this episode? Because her hair's really short.
Oh, no. So Gates has clarified that she did not wear any wigs in season one. It was all her own hair. And so, that I noticed it seemed longer in this episode. But it was her own hair.
But at the dinner scene, it feels like it's very, very short. Like it's all up the way.
Oh, yeah. It's like I said, it's all done up very odd matronly style. It was an odd choice for whoever was doing hair and makeup.
Yeah,
that day.
I get that. It felt a bit like Captain Janeway, like early Voyager. Like she gets up 5 hours early just to do her hair.
I did like she was like, she's kind of the captain's date at that dinner.
Amy?
So I was wondering, did you guys notice that Riker was called Bill?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I have that as a head to bring up.
Yes, I never noticed it. And it was my mom who was like, hey, Troy calls Riker Bill. And that happens in The Naked Now. And then this is the last time it happens. But this episode was produced and filmed as the third episode, but didn't show up and aired until the 11th. So I think they were trying out Bill at the beginning and then was like, nope, we're going Will. And so we see that in episode 11, but it was originally filmed and produced as episode 3.
I did not know that.
The order of shooting makes a whole lot more sense. And I was thinking that Beverly's hair changed from the prior episode. And it was like, it looks more like it did in the cast photos for season 1. So that would have been taken early on. So that makes a lot more sense why, you know, some of the continuity stuff.
And I think as well, I prefer Will.
Mm-hmm.
There's is there a manly ruggedness to Bill that Will doesn't have? I'm talking about the names, not the person. There's a softness to the name Will as opposed to Bill. Sounds like he chops logs and fights bears. Will maybe lives in the city and only does that kind of thing at the weekend.
Yeah, I just think of Bill Shatner, so Will is better.
Same. Other guest stars, we have Carol Stroykin as Mr. Holm.
Mr. Holm.
Who I feel like he's probably been in any time they want a really tall person. Like a James Bond movie.
Hasn't he come to STLV? Have you met him, you guys? I thought that he had been once, I feel. I don't know.
I'm not sure. Who is he? He's in Star Trek and he plays the Spectre. Oh, it's a Voyager episode.
The Thaw.
Yeah.
He played the Spectre in Voyager's The Thaw.
Yeah.
But
I feel like he's in like a bunch of other stuff. He's in the Addams Family, obviously. He plays Lurch.
Lurch.
That is a lot of guest actors in this episode. Wow, it is.
What about then importance to canon? Because I think we've covered guest actors. Christos, you go first.
Well, I think obviously meeting Laxuana Troi and Mr. Holm, that's important to canon. She will appear, I mean, how many more times between TNG and DS9? It establishes that you get naked in a Beta Zoid wedding. And that runs through all the way to Nemesis, you know, so kind of end capping there. You get a little bit more on the background between Riker and Troy. And so a little bit more of that is established out. And I guess you also learn that Betazoids have an archaic, kind of prearranged marriage situation that is also kind of being viewed. It's also viewed as archaic. I think everything else is kind of comes and goes, doesn't have much of an impact, but I think just those guest stars and a deeper drive into, like I said, Beta Z culture and also, like I said, getting a little bit more in the whole Riker Troy. What do you think, Amy?
One thing that I really noticed was the whole Riker Troy, and then seeing that, through the series. At the very beginning, we have Riker in his quarters running some holodeck program. Oh, you guys, it's so cheesy and cringy. These two beautiful women playing music just for Riker. And then to have it offset with him getting annoyed that Deanna's getting married. Ooh, and I'm like, okay, why are they doing this? Why are they making Riker so cringy? But again, just sort of, I think, to set up their dynamic that they knew each other. They had a previous relationship. Is he interested? Is he not interested? Will they? Won't they? We sort of get that here in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of think that, there's these little nuances with Riker in season one and season two, where he's kind of that. I'm a man and I'm going to have my way both ways. And I kind of think that's that whole Maurice Hurley influence into the scripts, because he kind of apparently had a little bit of an obsession with the Riker character, and he kind of was that's who he wanted to be, and I think. And so, and we all know what people say about him, but Riker's just kind of like that. No, you don't get to have it. You broke up with her. You don't get to have it. And what she does with her life is her business. And it's kind of like, reminds me of that scene in The Child, the season two opener, when Deanna's pregnant and suddenly from the alien, and he feels like he gets a say or should have a say, or it's everyone's business. It's like, it's none of your damn business. And you're not on that level with her, so you don't get to have these feelings, or at least make her feel bad, or try to make her feel bad. Sorry, that's a little bit of a rant, but it evokes
them. That's why you're here, rant away. So in terms of the outdated kind of arranged marriage thing, I think that goes both ways. Why are the Millers, who are human, they are human, aren't they? I think you mentioned that they're human.
Yes.
Why are they in the 24th century arranging a marriage for their son? Just because they were friends with the Troys at some point, one of whom was human. Do you know what I mean? The whole relationship, they are mostly humans. So why are humans still arranging marriages in the future?
Yeah, and if you think about that too, to your point, Wyatt, he's human. And Indiana's half human. So you've got a 75% human, 25% Betazoid wedding, but we're doing all the Betazoid tradition. Mm. So it seems a little, unequal there.
I think that's just the fact that Loaxana is just such a domineering presence, isn't she? Just comes in and wants it her way, because she's the holder of some chalice and some dusty old rings somewhere. Yeah, there's loads in this episode that's important to canon. And I think we've mentioned it before. It's the Will Deanna relationship. It's meeting Loaxana for the first time. I feel like we see that Telerian plague ship again in a different guise. I feel like it turns up in Deep Space Nine a couple of times as a different ship with a different paint job on it. Moderately important to canon because of the introductions we get.
Another little sexist note I find on that is that, Beverly's knowledge of a doctor seems to be downgraded when a man doctor comes on the ship, because she's like suddenly deferring to him and he's kind of taking the lead. And it's like, we've established that Beverly's quite smart and she's had to solve plagues before and whatnot. So I kind of just noticed that, it's almost like she has nothing to say in these scenes that she's in with him, and it seems a little awkward. And it would have been better written for them to be truly kind of collaborating a little bit there in the medicine side, instead of her being like, oh, well, you're an expert in this. Whatever you say was kind of the attitude.
Which is kind of counterpoint to what we see when Worf breaks his spine and there's other female doctor, but in Beverly's like alpha doctor and gets her heckles up. But here, I suppose because it's early on in TNG's run, she kind of takes a back seat to the man doctor. Is that an interesting point? Did that alert your Beverly defense mechanism, Christos? Were you triggered by that?
Yeah, I got a little triggered. I was like, you know what? This is her sick bay. She's the CMO. She should be driving this ship.
True. Okay, I think we've covered Haven extensively. Shall we move on to Times Squared? And this was Season 2, Episode 13. Christos, it's your turn to give a synopsis, if you wish.
Sure thing. So, kind of a bizarre episode. You know, so the Enterprise is just kind of cruising along, and suddenly they come across a shuttlecraft, which turns out to be one of the Enterprise's shuttlecraft, and they pull it into the shuttle bay, and they find out it's got Captain Picard in it, but Captain Picard's on the bridge, so how could that be? The shuttlecraft has no power, you know, so they start to work on it, start to get some clarity to what's going on, starts coming to be. You find out that it's Picard from 6 hours in the future, and they are finally able to get the logs from the shuttle and find out that the Enterprise was destroyed and by this anomaly. And so Picard starts to, you know, they have to go into this whole, like, am I second guessing myself? Because what's going to lead up to those events, and what do we do or don't do that's going to get there? Sounds a whole lot like another episode from season 5, but we can get into that a little bit later. You know, there's this whole dynamic between Troy and Pulaski and Picard. And then eventually, you know, as time goes on and Picard from the future gets closer to the point in time where he left his time, he starts to become more clear in what's happening, and they start to eventually get answers from him. And eventually, out of nowhere, the anomaly shows up, and suddenly we're not speculating about what we're going to do. We're in the moment where we got to do what we're going to do. And it seems like with the Enterprise, everything that they're doing is you know, not working. Everything they do just kind of makes it worse. And it's almost like they create this whole like duality of the opposite is true. For example, the power worked, power repowering the shuttle worked exactly the opposite of the way that it should. And so as they're trying to pull away from the anomaly, they figure out that, you know, instead of pulling away from the anomaly, they need to dive right into the anomaly, and they dive right into the anomaly and everything is solved. And we don't really know why the anomaly was, where it came from, what the whole point of it was. And there was this whole little aspect that it seemed to be focused on Picard, and that the anomaly was somewhat sentient or had some sort of feelings that Troy could detect or, you know, but really, we don't really know why any of it happened. And we just know that, you know, and, you know, as soon as they go into the anomaly and it goes away, then the duplicate shuttlecraft and the duplicate Picard disappear, and all is well in the universe. There you go. There's my latte espresso high energy version of
time. That's why we don't have to watch it again, because that was quite a good synopsis. I enjoy this episode. Like a few TNG episodes, I don't really know what's going on, because I don't think it does a very good job of explaining. There's a big mystery that's set up. It doesn't really come to any kind of satisfying conclusion. It just ends and goes away, which annoys me. I like the whole setup, and I like the way it goes for the most of the episode. Then it just, drive into the anomaly and it disappears. Like, I want some science-y explanation, because it's a science fiction show. Amy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's one thing that, sort of annoys me with this. Like, when they're talking to 6 hour ahead Picard, and he's like all, you know, disoriented. And then, like, as you said, the closer we get to the time, and I'm like, that just doesn't make sense. Why would 6 hour Picard be coming more coherent? He's already 6 hours ahead. So the fact that we're coming up on that point just still puts him 6 hours ahead. He's never, I don't know, that just sort of threw me off. Maybe I'm being too linear with my time. That definitely could be. Q has warned us not to do that. So there's something with when the first Picard goes in and the second Picard, when we get that time, like there seems to be something important there and it's not really ever discussed. So yeah, I'm was looking for a better explanation with that as well.
So Amy, are you like me and not very good with our four-dimensional geometry? Yeah. Listeners, that was an Orville reference if you've seen season 3, episode 1.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we talk about the lack of guest stars? Literally, there are a couple of bridge officers and some people, but they're not really.
You get O'Brien in this episode, mm-hmm. and he barely has some... At first, he said, I think he's like, oh, is he going to say nothing? But then he does say something. But... Did it feel like that he was security in this episode? I mean, that's what it felt like.
That's
didn't that, you know?
I've thought that, O'Brien goes in between transporter and security. I agree with you on that. I don't know that they knew exactly what his job was going to be.
Yeah, I think it's early enough that he was just the needed person. And it was Colm Meaney that was going to fill that position for whatever the script required. So really we've got O'Brien, but feels like we can't really mention him as guest cast because he's in so much Star Trek.
I think the closest we come to a guest in this episode.
Yeah, so. There's some uncredited folk as bridge officers and Guy Vardaman is Darian Wallace. Who's
special guest appearance by Diana Muldaur.
Or does it not really pain you to mention her name? Christos.
I that does not pain me. I like Pawlowski. I just don't like that Beverly's not there. There's a difference.
That's correct. Okay, so no guest stars. Really to note. Right. What about the importance to canon?
So I wanted to ask, at the beginning of this episode, we've got Riker who found some eggs off of some planet and has invited some of his friends, Worf, Geordi, Pulaski, to have some breakfast together. And he's making these scrambled eggs and Pulaski brings ale to breakfast, girl, that she can drink, obviously.
I mean, I don't know. Was it technically breakfast or was he just making
eggs? It seemed breakfast. It was before any of the things, events went on. And I figured scrambled eggs was a breakfast item.
Are you assuming all episodes start at 8 a.m. when they've just started work? Yeah.
Yes, that's so what I'm assuming.
Anomalies occur before lunch.
Exactly. So my question is, do you feel that Riker scrambling eggs is part of the continuity of breaking bread, as Pulaski says? We see that with Pike, who does that. We have in Generations, right? Shatner doing it. Like, is this the beginning of scrambling eggs?
Well, we've got Picard and Beverly's breakfasts.
That happened later.
You see, I don't really want to talk about this part of the episode because it makes me really angry. I refuse to believe that by the 24th century, they've not managed to make a non-stick pan. Because literally half the eggs stick. And it's not even...
Or that cheesy 80s spatula.
Yeah, or the weird cooker thing they've got. Like the
I liked
bowl.
That. Yeah.
My main problem was the fact that half the eggs literally stuck to that. It's not even an egg pan.
No, it was like a flat pancake pan. And I'm like, he's going to dump that. And then the eggs are going to fall over. It did not seem like the best pan.
Pulaski with that, you have a practiced hand. I'm like, shut up. He's never cooked a day in his life. Ugh, annoyed me. But do you know what? The funny bits where the Worf find them delicious and everybody else find them unpalatable.
I do like that this is in season two. It's kind of the beginning of seeing the crew hanging out a little bit off duty, whether it's the poker games or whether it's cooking or things like that. You kind of, you get a little bit more character development happening with the characters when, you know, with a little bit of off duty stuff going on. So I did really appreciate the scene for that. The eggs were Owan eggs that he picked up on Starbase 73. Right. So maybe those just don't taste good or something, but apparently the Klingons, they taste great.
Yeah. Riker, after inviting his friends to his quarters for their breakfasty brunch with beer, immediately before it's even finished, he gets called to the bridge. So is he on duty or is he not? If he's on duty, then why is he inviting his friends round? And if he isn't on duty, then why is Captain Picard calling him to the bridge?
I think he's just on call.
I think when you're the first officer, yeah, you're always on call. And when you encounter something, yes, you might, you know, you see them get called in the middle of the night sometimes. Oh, guess what?
Yeah,
you're working.
But you're hardly going to call your first officer to the bridge when you see another shuttlecraft in the distance, are you? It's not like something hugely cataclysmic is about to happen. It's just a ship. You bring it on board and you start the investigations. Then, if things are going a bit awry, you go, I'll bring in my A-team.
Yeah. I tend to agree with that. They do say that, you know, there's not supposed to be, how did a shuttle get this far out into space? There's no star bases or ships out here. So they kind of presume something is wrong if a shuttlecraft is this far out by itself.
Sorry. It's too warm in here, so I've had to open the windows, and we're right beside the bypass and the hospitals along the road. So there's always ambulances it's like the Wild West where I live.
So, you know, one thing that I like about this episode, and I need to remember when everyone says, Deanna never counsels. Okay, this episode, like Picard twice is having Troy come with him. And, you know, as they're walking through, she's, you know, advising him and helping him go through this major, like, how would you deal if you saw yourself, you know, and find out that, oh, this person's 6 hours ahead of you. Like, there's, I'm sure, in my headcanon, a lot of counseling going on that we don't see on screen. So I completely think that Troy is very valuable in this episode.
What did you think, Ava? I was thinking of you a little bit in the scene where in sickbay, where Pulaski's already plotting, you know, she's already thinking about removing him from being captain because he's too personally involved. And Deanna's like not having it at all. Like, doesn't feel that's necessary. She's pushing back on Pulaski and like, you're out of line. What did you think of that?
It's, you know, sort of when it comes head to head, who really has the final say? Like doctors, you know, and especially chief medical officers, like they say they're the only ones who can remove a captain. And then you've got Troy, who's evaluating his mental state and who's saying he is very capable and he's the one to do the job. And I can sense that he's not losing it. So, head to head, if push came to shove, could Troy override a chief medical officer's command like that? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so either. I think they've established in season one, especially, that Beverly is the only person when in that particular, I forget what that episode that was, where he's been taken over. So unless something changed, I guess, but I just thought it was weird, kind of weird plot twist that's what she was already there and talking about that. It seemed a little bit.
Yeah, there's some contention there. And I sort of feel like they sort of wrote Pulaski that way to have tension with the crew.
Is that why we don't like her?
I think it's stuff like that, honestly. Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, I think it's when they would write Pulaski like that, that's why a lot of fans didn't like her. Because she was, you know, whether it was Data or Picard, she's always squabbling with somebody, you know, and, you know, you either want people who kind of are fit in or people who are just going to, you know, be contrary to everything. And I think that's where she got her that this reputation the characters had for years of being, you know, not liked or awful, you know. And then I know she does have her fans, but, you know, it's, I think it's stuff like that.
I think we tend not to like people when they upset the status quo and that comfortable family sense we get from our main crew, and we bring other people in like Edward Jellicoe or Catherine Pulaski. And it's like, oh, we don't like change. We're protecting our family. That's maybe it.
So talking about that opposite nature that we see here, and there's other episodes where, you know, people are out of phase, i.e. the phase shift that we saw with Geordi and Ro when they were sort of out of sync. We have another episode where they're out of sync. And I guess it makes sense, like when they're trying to boot up the shuttlecraft, the Elbaz, that, you know, Data's like, okay, put it, you know, a positive two, a plus two, and then it shuts down. And then he's like, well, let's try negative two. And well, this shouldn't work, but it works. Like there's, I don't know if I wanted it to be exactly the opposite, but I guess that would have been too difficult to have it be anything else besides if here's forward, then we have to go backwards. I don't know. I didn't feel like that. And when they said, oh, this is the opposite, I'm like, well, is this TNG's like mirror universe thing? I don't know. What did you think about that being so opposite?
Is it just oversimplifying it for the audience? Yeah. The audience, yeah. Star Trek audience are smarter than they probably think. So they could probably handle a bit more detail.
I think too, I hadn't seen this episode in forever when I was rewatching it this morning. I kind of thought they were going to take a similar approach in sickbay with treating Picard, like some sort of opposite approach to medicine would help, you know, the other Picard, you know, come back to normalcy or something, but they totally didn't go there at all. They just came up with this, the closer he gets to the period of he left the time, his own time, if things will get better. I'm like, no, I think it would have been a better plot device if Pulaski figures out that she needs to somehow, you know, give him some sort of alternate formula of a medication or something in order to get a response from him.
Well, they did that. They did, yeah.
Because they gave him the stimulant to wake him up. Did you not want him? Amy and I didn't even watch it.
Yeah.
They gave him the stimulant and then all the wee red triangles went down and like he died.
Yeah.
On the screen, and then they're like, "Oh, let's give him something that's going to kill him, and he'll wake up."
Yeah, she's like, "That wasn't supposed to happen."
I guess I totally faced. I must have faced out watching this morning. I did have a little bit of fun last night. So the other thing I thought of with this episode, I kind of mentioned it a little bit when I was giving the recap, is doesn't this seem like a really watered down version of Cause and Effect? Like a lot, you know, the whole idea that something's going to happen. We have, you know, we know something happens and it's going to be a decision that we make. And they're second guessing what that future decision would be or what their course of action should be based on the idea that something that they do is going to cause the Enterprise to be destroyed. So they're, how do you like deconstruct and second guess yourself? That's totally what they start to figure out in Cause and Effect. So very much reminded me of that.
This is that Times Square's a practice run for Cause and Effect, isn't it? In terms of script writing, I think they maybe realized that they didn't get it entirely right. Maybe and thought, let's make an episode that's actually really, really, really good, and we get Cause and Effect.
Yeah, I love it when they're, you know, guessing themselves, and they're like, well, do we continue on our path? Well, this is the path that leads us to that. So do we go back? Well, that could be why. That argument is always so fun. And it's every single time we're just going to go our normal path. And I'm just like, do we even need that discussion? Because they always just go forward. It's funny.
I did like the conversation, though, that Riker and Picard have in the ready room. They kind of like bond a little bit in that sense where he's a little candid with the discussion. And, well, you know, Jean-Luc, this is how you approach things. And really, maybe you should think about not approaching it this way. And I feel like it's one of the first times in the first season or two that Picard kind of lets his guard down and him and Riker have a more casual conversation. And I thought that scene was really good. Yeah.
One thing that I liked when they found, then they brought the shuttlecraft in and they were reading the USS Enterprise 1701-D. And they're like, when Worf was like, what was the episode when Worf says, two bridges? And he gets all angry. That is totally what they looked at the two shuttlecrafts. I could just in my mind hear Worf saying, two shuttlecraft? What was that episode? Do you remember? It was season one. And they had to go through the portal and they kept walking into the bridge and that was different doors. And Worf was like, two bridges? Anyways, listeners, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. I just think it's always a little funny when you think about 80s television or, you know, how dumb do you think the audience is that some of these things just have to be like the explanation and just the stating of the obvious has to be done for the audience sake. It's like, you know, do you really think we're not paying attention?
I think the other thing that's exactly what they do, they write for the stupidest watcher.
You don't need they? To say that again.
Okay, I think that's exactly what they do. They write for the stupidest watcher. That might be me after that sentence.
Well, you have to get the common denominator.
It's the lowest common denominator to go for, isn't it?
Yeah.
Make sure the vast majority of the audience is going to understand it. I reckon.
I mean, I was going to say, is it important?
I don't think it is.
I mean,
is there anything?
I mean,
the eggs, the bread idea, which we see a few times before us.
He's kind of humming jazz music while he's doing the eggs. But, you know, nothing that I feel like happens in this episode. It really could just be a one-off episode and you don't need to know anything to watch it. And you don't need to, it does not inform any future episodes in any way.
And how wonderful!
Other than cause
and how wonderful is that?
Yeah, no, it's not a bad thing.
That's kind of why we love it. Well, love the episodic TV in general because you can just jump in. You don't have to have watched 8 episodes of nothing in order to get to why the big bad alien space creature is attacking whoever it's attacking. Okay, so we're agreed that it's not important to canon in any way, shape, or form. It's completely insignificant. Might as well have been deleted.
Okay. All right. Well, listeners, we have it out on Twitter. Oh, my goodness. It is tied. Four votes. 50% wanted Haven and 50% voted for Times Squared. And we have Stuart say his name?
McElwain.
That's okay. We have Stuart McElwain who says Times Squared is a great episode. One of my favorites. There you have it on Twitter. Now, Facebook on our Facebook group. Oh, my goodness. We have 77% for Times Squared and only 22% for Haven.
So, Amy, did you vote on that?
I did not vote.
I don't vote on it.
Okay, because I did. Because since I knew I was going to be on, I did not
vote. Okay, good. So there we have it.
Our listener, Jo Helen, on the Facebook poll says, see, I think Haven has got to edge it on the canon element. Times Squared is an all right episode, but Haven brings us Loxana and Hom and some of Deanna's heritage and a touch of background to the Riker-Troy relationship. Plus, there's one of the best Data one-liners in the entire series. And Jo, I assume you're referring to the please continue your... Why is it your bickering?
Banter, bickering.
I think it's petty bickering.
Yes, it's great. You just watch Picard's eyes. It's like, oh my goodness, how could this dinner get any worse at a point? Joe, I'm kind of curious to know if you've hacked our Zoom because you've just basically said everything that we've said while I've been talking. Interesting. Okay. Christos, give us your thoughts on both episodes and which one you're voting for, please.
Okay, so I do enjoy Haven for everything we just talked about. I mean, the dinner scene, whatever reception is just, it's a really fun scene. And I enjoy it. It's comedic, like we talked about. I love Lakshwana Troy. Times Squared, I think it's a mystery and you're trying to figure it out in the audience. And it's a little bit suspenseful and, you know, you're just as curious as Picard is. It's almost like, you know, Picard is kind of a mirror of the audience in that. And, you know, they're both very, very different episodes, but I got to tell you, after rewatching them both this morning, all the way through, and I guess maybe I could have paid more attention to Times Squared, I actually did enjoy Times Square, and that's what I'm going to vote for, because it really had my attention. And maybe because I hadn't seen it in so long, it was kind of like watching it again for the first time in some ways. But I just really enjoyed it. I think it hurts it that it doesn't quite have a clear reason for why all of it happened. But, you know, that is life sometimes. Sometimes we just don't know why things happened and we just move on. So not everything gets explained beautifully, and not everything in Star Trek should have to be explained beautifully, because sometimes they're just not going to know. So I'm voting for Times Square because I just think it's, from start to finish, it's a more enjoyable episode. I'm not taking importance to canon into account at all.
That is absolutely fine. We don't have any rules on this podcast. Amy.
Okay. Well, I hate to be the predictable one. And I really did. I came into this going, oh, Haven, it's a Troy episode. Everyone's going to think that I'm going to choose Haven. And so I watched Times Squared because I had just recently seen Haven. And I really did enjoy Times Squared. And so I'm like, gosh, maybe I'm going to choose Times Squared. So I really did come into this not knowing which way I was going to vote. And through our discussion, I definitely am for sure voting for Haven. Like, the amount of guest stars, unbelievable. Even some I didn't even know. And the importance to canon, of course, with it being Troy. How much we learn about Beta Zed tradition. The funness of the episode is just awesome. The dinner, everything, to their sideway glances, the relationships, like, I definitely am voting for Haven. Joe,
okay.
We are tied. So you are going to be the tiebreaker.
I'm fine.
You got all the power.
So, let's say I watched both episodes today, because I kind of did, even though the second half of Times Squared was in fast forward and they were all talking like chipmunks. When I went down to sit and watch them, I thought, okay, what's Haven about again? What's Times Squared about again? And then as soon as the episode started, all the little memory jigsaw pieces fell into place and I remembered both episodes quite well. So I enjoy them both to a certain extent for maybe different reasons. Two things about Times Squared annoy me. And that, I think I'm going to compare it to Cause and Effect. I don't think we necessarily need Times Squared anymore because we have Cause and Effect. They're both the same episode, but we get a really good explanation in Cause and Effect. So, and the non-stick frying pan that's inappropriately shaped for scrambled eggs is annoying me still. And we've got Darrow Hannah. Not Darrow Hannah, in Haven. Remember that really cool spaceship?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the globe? Yeah, the looks like a soap bubble. It's a difficult one. I think I'm going to vote for Haven.
All righty.
All because some production assistant did not get Riker, some Pam to spray
exactly.
That can with
yep.
before he And it cost him a battle, 35 years later.
If you're making scrambled eggs, just a wee knob of butter, they could have gone and milked the Enterprise cow down on deck 17 beside the dolphins.
I'm sure from up the long ladder.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. They have cows and sheep and pigs and all sorts.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, Haven.
All right.
I like the... Both episodes have some that intrigue that I love about. There's a mystery to solve. But yeah,
Haven, you don't need to backpedal. We are just fine with Haven winning.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm just going to try to justify it in my own mind, I think. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, Haven will go up against Ensign Roe whenever that happens. So
we all know how that'll go.
So.
I'm voting for Haven again. I don't like her.
Just for that whole Bajoran earring business.
Yeah.
Like well, then the next time we have a Batleth battle, it will be 11001001 versus Unnatural Selection. We're having another early TNG Batleth. Another one and two.
I just watched Unnatural.
Yeah, I can tell you what that was.
Unnatural
about.
Selection.
11001001. I can like play the script. I can play the episode in my head pretty much.
Unnatural Selection is another Pawlowski episode where she starts aging rapidly because of that virus.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
It is a good. I do enjoy that episode.
But we've got a starbase in 11001001.
I love that one too. I love that one.
Yeah,
and we've got Minuet.
Yep.
Watch out, you're jumping into it already.
It's a difficult one. Oh dear. So sorry, Christos, we brought you on here and we didn't let it go your way. I apologize.
Oh, that's quite all right. I do not like have any passion toward either one of these episodes that I'm going to be all hurt that mine did not win.
Good. So. Christos, thank you for being with us today. It's been such a joy to have you here, and it's been far too long since we spoke, so it's been good to have this wee chat.
Thank you for having me, and it's good to talk to you.
Where can our listeners find you on the socials, as the young kids say?
Let's see. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at GreekGeekSD. That's GreekGeekSD for San Diego. And I've been over in the on Facebook page, the BQN page on Facebook. So
just for reference, like the young kids say the Insta, if you're cool with the young kids.
Yeah.
You don't have to say gram at the end. That's just like for the oldies.
They don't even call it IG anymore. It's Insta. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know how old we are, Joe.
I feel ancient. Properly ancient. I feel like some beef jerky because I've just been out in the sun too much.
Incoming transmission.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show and hope you'll join the Facebook group, the BQN Collective. If you were already on the Federation Council Chambers, you're already there and won't have to join another group. And it's really amazing because I've been told to ad-lib to make it sound really amazing. It's the best thing you've ever seen. Please join us. You can also follow us on Twitter at Galaxy Class Pod. You can also follow the network on Twitter and IG at BQN Podcasts.
Insta, as the young ones say.
Insta. Did you see my Insta?
Mm-hmm. Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the show, and we would love your support. So, Joe, where can people find you when you are making scrambled eggs in the appropriate nonstick pan?
Well, I love to cook, so yeah, they would be amazing scrambled eggs. The key is butter.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of it. Like maybe more butter than egg, potentially.
Would you like some eggs with your butter?
Yeah. Yeah, when I'm not doing that, you can find me on the BQN Collective on Facebook. You can tweet me on the Twitter or Insta me on the Insta, if that's what one does, at joeyjoe77uk. Or you can email me, joepodcasts@gmail.com. And Amy, where can people find you when you're feeding your guests scrambled egg with an added helping of Teflon? an appropriate spatula on a nonstick pan.
Well, when I'm not doing that, I would not be trying to kill my guests by feeding them Teflon. That stuff is dangerous. Remember when, everyone was buying nonstick pans and then the Teflon sort of started rubbing off and then it was like this big event. Don't buy Teflon. It comes off and you're ingesting it. It was a big scare in the 80s.
It only comes off if, like, people use metal spatulas.
I know. That's because people don't know how to cook. Yeah. Well, hey, listeners, you can find me here on the network where I'm co-hosting All Good Things and Union Federation. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but there, of course, in the BQN Collective on Facebook.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We're putting out more exclusive content for our patrons, like It's Green or Amy's Math Moments that you won't want to miss. With a monthly Patreon subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings of the Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Watch our Patreon messages for details. If you feel so inclined, please check out all the details on patreon.com/BQN. A huge shout out to our very own associate producer, Jim McMahon. And you will have heard of Jim McMahon because he's our trivia master. And we are so grateful to you for your support.
At this time, we'd like to give special thanks to those executive producers on BQN. They are Mark White, Tony Robinson, Ken Tripp, and me.
Amy Nelson. Thank you for beaming aboard the Galaxy Class, and until next time,
great joy and gratitude.
Mr. Holm, if you're my mother's valet, then valet.
Engage.
This has been